On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, I am joined by The Athletic's Andy McCullough to discuss all things Dodgers. Roky Sasaki will be going to LA. They also signed Tanner Scott. Are they bad for baseball? That and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world waiting for the Dodgers to finally make a move. I'm Jake Mintz, and I'm back for my worldwide tour. Jordan Schusterman, however, is on vacation right now. He is in the Caribbean, and so I am joined by a pinch hitter, one Mr. Andy McCullough of The Athletic. Andy, thank you for filling it.
Oh, man, thank you so much for having me. I wish Jordan was as dedicated to this podcast as you were. I mean, you were doing this from, you know, Kuala Lumpur and various parts of Asia.
Yeah, I think it's probably healthier the way Jordan is handling things.
Yeah, so, to actually go on vacation? Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to tip your cap. On today's episode, yes, we will talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have signed Roky Sasaki, the Japanese flame-throwing 23-year-old pitcher. They have also signed Tanner Scott. We will do a little bit. Are the Dodgers ruining baseball? Conversation. Spoiler, no. Anthony Santander goes to the Toronto Blue Jays, who finally find someone who will take their money. And then the Hall of Fame. But we will begin with the opener. The Los Angeles Dodgers. What a surprise. The shock of the century. Reel in Roky Sasaki for $6.5 million bonus. A nice chunk of change for you and me. Nothing for the Guggenheim Group. It was announced via Instagram. Roky just posted it online like his hero Shohei Ohtani. Andy, first thoughts when you saw the news?
Wow. I did not see that coming.
I can't believe it.
I cannot believe it. Yeah, I mean, like, look, there'd been a lot of smoke about the Dodgers and Sasaki for months leading up to this, right? Like, other teams kind of, you know, Soto Voque complaining that they felt like it was a done deal. MLB has, you know, it's been reported, I guess, that MLB did an investigation and turned out, you know, nothing to be found there. You know, Joel Wolf, Sasaki's agent, was like vocal throughout the process that there wasn't a pre-made deal, all that sort of stuff. So even without all that sort of chatter, like, yeah, he's gonna go play for the Dodgers. They have Shohei Ohtani. They're running a six-man rotation. They're the best team in the world. Why would he pick another team?
Why would he pick, especially when you compare them to the other finalists? Right.
I mean, sure. Yeah, you can do it as like a you know, why would he pick the Blue Jays? I don't know. He might like poutine. You know, why would he pick San Diego? Now they're there. There's an actual argument for like one, you know, as his relationship with Yu Darvish and also, you know, their pitching development, you know, has gotten better in recent years. But like
he loves watching Jake Cronenworth play ball.
Sure. Yeah, you know, he likes having burritos with fries in them. Who can say? I'm just going to keep making regional food jokes to really connect with the youth audience of this podcast. But they've run a six-man rotation for several years now. They just haven't used six starters in it. They're actually going to do a six-man now. There's Ohtani, there's Yamamoto, it's close to Japan. They're going to win the division. They're the World Series favorite. He will be both like a huge star and also not really under a microscope at all because, you know, all the attention goes to Ohtani. Like, it just, why would you pick another team? It's like the Dodgers have created a flywheel where like everyone wants to go there. And I understand why that's, you know, driving baseball fans crazy right now, but it kind of is what it is.
Kevin Durant, when he went to the Warriors, received a lot of flack for hopping to the, you know, presumptive favorite.
Yeah.
This is a little bit different because one, Roky Sasaki is not one of the five best players in the league already. And we'll get to that in a second. And it is a much more rational decision for Sasaki. The infrastructure in LA to help him onboard into being a successful major leaguer, it's light years better than what anybody else can offer him, right? And that is both in terms of the pitching development, but in terms of him coming to a team that has other Japanese superstars and can offer him the environment that's going to make him feel comfortable immediately. Like, I think that does have impact.
Yeah, I mean, I think the latter factors you're mentioning, the LA aspect of it, the competition, you know, all of those, it's just you're not going to beat the Dodgers on those metrics. If you were looking at just pitching development, there's other teams who I think are comparable, yeah, if not better, specifically with keeping guys healthy. And that's something, you know, Ken Rosenthal, my colleague from The Athletic, has a, you know, had a column the other day about how, like, the main charge for the Dodgers to basically keep Sasaki healthy, which is going to be a significant challenge if you talk to scouts who have seen him and looked at his delivery and, you know, tracked him over the last couple of years as he's dealt with some health stuff, some velo stuff. Like, he's probably going to get hurt at some point, right?
He's going to get Tommy John. Like, yeah. Yes, like that will happen.
Probably. It,
the yeah. combination of him throwing that hard at that age with arm issues and being on the Los Angeles Dodgers, like, I will take the over on Tommy John.
I don't know if the Dodgers specifically are the thing that's going to make him break. It's probably the pitching, but yeah. So, like, you can argue if his whole thing was, I want to go to, you know, the team that is going to keep my arm healthiest, he probably, you know, would have joined like an underhand softball league because pitching is bad for your arm. If you wanted to go for the team that would make you the best player, you could argue that there's other spots where you could be, you know, you could have that, you know, sort of chance. But if you want to be good, if you want to be on a good team, if you want to be in a comfortable environment, yeah, like, you're just, the Dodgers, like, obviously make the most sense.
Does he start a postseason game?
If he's healthy, yeah.
Okay, so who doesn't? And this is a good transition into the Dodgers. The hurt guys, right? So the Dodgers are going to roll into the season with a six-man rotation. Five of those spots are effectively set. Glasnow, Snell, Sasaki, Yamamoto, Ohtani. How many of those guys will be in the opening day rotation is a different conversation. Ohtani probably not.
Ohtani will not be, yeah.
You could envision a world where they decide to kind of onboard Sasaki late and not have him start the season. There are same thing with Glasnow, right? Like, you could envision the reason the Dodgers have this many talented arms now is because they can play games with their innings so that they're presumably ready to go in October, right? That who has the sixth most starts this year for the Los Angeles Dodgers is an interesting question. Other options: Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin, who people forget he was freaking amazing for like a 2-year stretch. Bobby Miller, who was maybe the worst pitcher I've ever seen in 2024. Landon Knack, who was the worst pitcher I had ever seen in the postseason in 2024. And then game four World Series starter, Ben Kasperius. And then the other question, Andy, what does this mean for free agent soft tosser Clayton Kershaw?
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to tell him you said that. He'll be like, who? So for Kershaw, the plan has always been to come back closer to midseason, you know, to kind of go on a version of the Roger Clemens plan from back in the day where, you know, he's kind of tired of doing spring training is my understanding. And, you know, he's recovering from knee surgery and also foot surgery or toe surgery. But he has a surgically repaired left shoulder, you know, and he wants to give it at least one more run, which is what he told me. You can read all about that in the paperback edition of The Last of His Kind, Clayton Kershaw and the Burden of Greatness, which I believe will be out May 6th. So Kershaw, you know, he is like, I don't know, this could change, obviously, because they don't have a contract signed yet or announced. But the plan is for him to sign and be there and, you know, early in the summer. And it's more just like a 40-man, 60-man issue right now. Yeah. But yeah, like in the bigger picture, as I texted, you know, you on the day that Sasaki signed, I said, remember this day when Ben Kasperius is starting game one in October. And we're all talking about the Dodgers super rotation because, like, again, you got Sasaki who comes with, you know, some injury risk. You have Shohei Ohtani who, like, everyone's penciling in for 125 innings, even though he's coming back from his second elbow reconstruction, which is not an easy thing to do. You have Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who had a significant shoulder injury last year. You have Tyler Glasnow, who got, I believe, elbow and was unable to answer the bell for the postseason. And then, like, you have Blake Snell, who is awesome, but also has dealt with injury issues over the past few years. So, like, none of these guys you can pencil in for 175, right? Now, if they're healthy and they're ready to go, they're, you know, lethal. But, like, you know, you got to dodge a bunch of bullets to get there.
We did just do this, right? Like, if you look at the Dodgers pitching rotation on opening day 2024, obviously it's not as good as the one that they'll enter this upcoming season with, but it's pretty damn good. And things change, right? Things happen. And we'll get to this in the second segment. Giving the Dodgers the 2025 World Series trophy is a fool's errand and premature, as overwhelming as their offseason does seem. One more conversation about Sasaki, and then we'll take a break. Does the entire process that he went through feel shallow in retrospect, that he has decided to sign with the Dodgers? Because I am sympathetic to fans of the 29 other teams who, for a year, were basically told, this guy's amazing. This is something worth caring about and investing in and thinking about. And then when the dust settled, he just ended up on the Dodgers. Now, at the same time, there were people writing smart things that said, hey, he's probably going to just be a Dodger. But I understand, like, okay, so here, a year from now, another Japanese superstar comes over, right? Like, what's stopping us from just assuming that he's going to be on the Dodgers, right? If he's a second baseman or a left fielder.
Yeah. So, you know, Jake, I'm glad you had me on this because, you know, I do, in addition to writing for The Athletic, I'm a co-host of The Roundtable, the only pro-labor baseball podcast.
Finally.
And, you know, if you want there to be an international draft, I've got 30 owners who agree with you. You know, but I don't want to speak for the entirety of the roundtable. I couldn't imagine speaking for Grant Brisby, but believe the players should have something called free agency and the ability to choose their employer, you know, as they come from the international market. Yeah. I mean, look, I get the frustration, but like that's the system. What is stopping, you know, that theoretical player coming over? Probably the work stoppage that's going to come in a couple years. And as the owners push very hard to implement an international draft. Until then, yeah, I mean, I guess you could, you know, if you're allowed to choose who you want to sign with, they will choose the best team. That's kind of how it works.
And it's a rational decision. And I think that's what I'm kind of left with Sasaki is like I think everybody's acting rationally, relatively. Like he picked the team that he should have gone to. The Dodgers obviously are going to go try and sign him. The Padres are going to give it their best shot. Padres fans should feel miffed and should boo him when he shows up.
Sure.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I would not shovel dirt on the Padres just yet. There's been a lot of times in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years when, you know, they've had a great run and then, you know, it's looked like, you know, they get turned back and it's looked like, wow, the Dodgers really have, you know, kind of snuffed out the Padres and, you know, that this whole sort of era is kind of over. And obviously they have ownership issues, they have some financial issues, but they were also like very close to eliminating the Dodgers in the postseason last year. They were the best team the Dodgers played. They had the Dodgers absolutely terrified in that 5-game series. Yeah. And, you know, probably would have been the World Series favorite if they advanced. So, like, it's not inconceivable that there's a very good San Diego Padres team again in 2025 or years beyond. They have a lot of talented players.
The Blue Jays, on the other hand, they're involved in the Sasaki thing.
No,
yes. Dude, I mean, the sentiment I got from talking to people around the league was like, they just look silly having acquired Miles Straw's albatross salary in addition to international bonus space hours before Sasaki announced he was going to the Dodgers, and now they're saddled with that contract. I give the Blue Jays, you got to give them credit for finishing on the podium again and again and again.
Dude,
they're doing something right.
They keep trying.
You know, but like, it's not just the effort to me, right? Like, it was effort for Corbin Burns and Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto, because if you show up with a big enough number, someone will take your phone call. For Sasaki, it's a slightly different story, right? There is something about the infrastructure and the overall package that influenced him to put them in the final three, right?
Yeah, I mean, Ken Rosenthal and I were doing, you know, reporting on that. And, you know, we had gotten wind of Sasaki being in Toronto to visit with them. And we were just kind of like, why? You know, like what? Like what? It's like really far from Japan. Like, you know, the, like, and some of it we were told was led to, you know, was related to Sasaki's, you know, friendship with Yusei Kikuchi, who'd spoken really highly of the organization in the city.
But you know, he's not on the Blue Jays.
No, and I understand that they traded him away. The Astros fiddled with some knobs and he immediately became better. You know, look, I wasn't privy to the conversation. I talked to some people in the international market and they were just like, I don't know, maybe he just wanted to go to Toronto. He'd never been, you know, like want to just visit the city. I don't know. I feel for Blue Jays fans because they have really been the stalking horse on the some of the biggest players over the last couple of years, you know, Otani, Soto, and now Sasaki. And so they've sort of developed a hard-earned callus, I think, to all of this.
Yeah. And the last thing that I took away from the process is the Mariners' tough look. Not getting an in-person meeting. Having probably a top three pitching development group.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when it comes to keeping young arms healthy. No one is better than the Mariners. They being the team that brought Ichiro Suzuki over and had a real stranglehold on the Japanese market for a significant period of time, losing that enormous advantage over the last 10 years, 15 years, is really bad. And whatever institutional flaws the Mariners have, whether it's their inability or unwillingness to spend money or the city, whatever it is, like, them not even getting an in-person meeting with Sasaki, like not even getting him out there, like that sucks, man. That's
have you called Jordan to ask how he's feeling about this?
No, he's in the Caribbean, so he doesn't care.
Oh, I was wondering if he was doing a thing where he doesn't know. Like he's gonna come back and be like, hey, who did Sasaki sign with?
We do that bit a lot. No, I think he knows. Yeah, I think he knows.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Look, again, it goes back to the earlier point we were talking about. Like, if you're talking about pitching development, like, yeah, you could argue Seattle does a better job with starters than the Dodgers do. They certainly keep them healthier. But it's the Dodgers, man. Like, it's hard to argue with what they're offering. They have Shohei Ohtani. I don't know if you were just in Japan. Like,
yeah,
he is so much bigger of a star there than I think people in America can comprehend. He is so ubiquitous. He is everywhere. Like, imagine if you were just like, you just walked into, you know, we live in New York. Imagine if you just like walked into West Side Market and there was just a huge, like, you know, picture of, you know, Aaron Judge, like plastered along the wall, right? Like, everywhere you went, there was Aaron Judge. Like, wow, this guy's a huge deal. It's like, that's Ohtani in Tokyo.
And so Ohtani has a deal with a green tea company.
Yes.
And in Japan, there are vending machines on every street. And I know you think I'm being like, oh, there's vending machines on every... There are vending machines every street. And in every vending machine sells this type of green tea that Ohtani sponsors, both hot and cold, which is an amazing thing about Japan.
Great
and
country.
And on 35%... of these vending machines, there is a picture of Shohei Ohtani standing in a field of green tea, looking out into the distance, admiring the deliciousness of the drink and, I guess, his own success. Now, quick nugget on this. There's a story I saw about, you know, Mookie Betts was telling Shohei Ohtani some parenting advice. This was like being aggregated today. Mookie's just in Tokyo right now because he is now also a spokesperson for the same green tea company.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a huge deal. Yeah. And so joining that sort of, if you're looking for endorsement money, you know, while also not having to deal with the tension, like the Dodgers are where it's at, man. There's not much that can be done about it. And Sasaki had free agency.
Free agency. All right, let's take a
quick
break. The
most important word in there was agency.
Because although he was almost free, relatively.
Right, for the Dodgers, he's basically free.
Let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about Tanner Scott also joining the Dodgers, and then we'll boot up the Is It Bad for Baseball machine. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Andy McCullough of The Athletic. The Dodgers, after adding Roky Sasaki, did not stay silent. They did not rest on their laurels. They went out and acquired the best reliever available, Tanner Scott, the bearded left-hander who spent last season on the San Diego Padres and the Miami Marlins. People forget, not this podcast, gets 4 years and $72 million from the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Cubs offered $466 million. Good job, Cubs. Competitive. Good job. You did it, Mr. Ricketts. Congratulations. O's, Red Sox, Jays also reported to have had interest. I would imagine that of those three teams, none of them wanted to go to a fourth year for a reliever, which is rational. 4 years for any reliever is something of a risk. But guess what? It's not for the Dodgers because there is no such thing as risk.
That one made me laugh when I saw that. Yeah. I was in Atlanta doing some college football reporting this weekend, and I got the news alert that he had signed with the Dodgers. And that one did make me laugh. It was like, okay, like overkill. Because like the Dodgers, if they had come into this winter and just been like, all right, we're just going to like try and get the band back together and get Sasaki, you'd be like, yeah, that seems reasonable. Like sign Teoscar Hernandez, get Sasaki, sounds good. And then they got Blake Snell. And then they got Sasaki. And then they could get Tanner Scott. And you're just like, man, these guys, like, they're real sickos. They don't care. That one made me laugh.
He might suck, but Michael Conforto also got $17 million.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, Michael, like, totally. Yeah. So Tanner Scott was like, you know, and this was in a limited sample, but I think he was the best pitcher I saw in the postseason last year. He was the guy who, when you came in, you're like, I don't see how another human can get a hit off him. You know, specifically, there's been a lot of clips going around of Ohtani just getting owned by him. So even just keeping him away from Ohtani for 4 years might be worth $72 million.
Absolutely. But, it's the Andrew Miller annual award of October. How does anyone touch this person with a bat?
Yeah, there's guys who come in, you see him every October, just like, this is the best pitcher I've ever seen. Like, this is not fair, you know? It's funny to me as someone who, you know, I covered the Dodgers for several years in kind of the early part of the, you know, Andrew Friedman, Farhan Zaidi reign, when they were like building this juggernaut, when they had taken, you know, this really good team from Ned Coletti and were turning it into this, you know, what it is now. And they were just like, so disciplined about contracts, about free agents. They were just like, this is dumb. Like, don't spend in free agency. They were like overextended. They felt like 6 years, 150 for Zach Greinke. The Diamondbacks came in and offered 200, and they were just like, phew, take them. All right, fine. Like, oh gosh. Oh, well, we're so like, oh, we'll live to, like, we're mad now, but we'll feel so much better in a couple years, you know? And they just, like, passed on every big free agent. They were just like, no, we got to build through this and this and this. And at some point, they, you know, and part of it was, you know, the drought extending. Part of it was, you know, some, they're just getting more financial foothold. They're just like, man, let's just, like, sign all the good players. Like, my colleague, Dylan Hernandez, would just write, like, hey, that's the best player. Like, sign him. Like, you should do that. And they were like, that's idiotic. Like, you don't understand surplus value. And now all these years later, they just like, they do all the good things they used to, but they also just, hey, who's at the top of the Athletics big board? We'll take them all.
Right. And I think part of that is from the desperation of not having one in a full season. And I think the other part of that is they're making more money now.
Yeah. Oh, Ohtani changed their business. Like, they made so much money. Last year, they made so much money and they didn't have to pay Ohtani because it's all deferred. So their business model is completely different than it was a couple years ago. Like, it's getting Ohtani to do that contract, everything is like gravy. They make so much more money than they used to.
It's a good business. Can you imagine shark tanking the Dodgers? Like, you walk in and you're like, A-Rod, Mark Cuban, here's the bit.
Yeah. And right. It's like, Arnie Moreno sitting there going like, so you're not paying him until many years in the future? I don't like that sort of structure.
I don't understand.
I don't like that.
Okay. I want to enter. Okay, Tanner Scott, he's good. Otani doesn't have to face him.
Well, just real quick, I do want to say this about relievers and Tanner Scott. I looked this up. He was very good last year. He was very good in 2023. Here are, in 2023, Tanner Scott was the most valuable reliever in baseball, according to Fangraphs War. Here are the next four pitchers on that list.
Ooh. This is like Jose Leclerc?
This is 2023. So it's Felix Bautista, who did not pitch last year.
Coming back, though. People coming forget. Back.
David Bednar, not good last year. Matt Brash, did not pitch last year. And Camilo Doval. So relievers, man. You know.
You just don't know. Yeah. But like, here's the thing. If he's unreal in 2025 and then hurt or ass for 3 years, good investment.
Yeah, it's just funny to me seeing how the Dodgers were so disciplined. The idea of them doing 4 for 72 for a reliever was just like beyond the pale. Like when they went, I think it was 5 for 70 for Kenley Jansen, they were like puking on their shoes knowing that they had to do it. And now it's like, yeah, Tanner Scott is good. Like Kenley Jansen's like borderline Hall of Famer, you know, like probably won't, but whatever.
I think he gets in.
Tanner Scott's been good for 2 years. Like it's crazy.
Okay, let's boot up the stereotypical conversation.
The discourse, baby.
The discourse are the Dodgers and they're spending bad for baseball. And I want to begin this conversation with a quote that has stuck with me. Before game one of the World Series this past year, Andrew Friedman did his media availability. This was the media availability where he was asked about Roky Sasaki.
Justice
for Ron Blum of the AP, who asked about Roky Sasaki, and Andrew Friedman poo-pooed him, and Ron was right in retrospect.
What was very, sorry, just real quick, what was very funny about that is he did not use the words Roky or Sasaki. He specifically asked about international bonus pool money, and Friedman blew up at him.
He didn't even get to say Roky Sasaki.
Right. He was just, it was very amusing. It was a very amusing scene.
It was one of the, every postseason, you get like one unforgettable press conference moment. And that was the one. But there was something else in this press conference that has stuck with me. Friedman, I don't remember who asked him this. He was asked, how do you react to people who say the two teams are here because they spend the most money? He answers the question initially by saying, that's not my problem, right? Like, I think he says baseball's more complicated than that, but it's not his problem. And then he says this. Quote, my ultimate kind of big picture goal is that when we are done, that we are able to look back and say that this was the golden era of Dodger baseball. That is an incredibly high bar to even say that. That's where my focus is. That's the plan, everybody. That's the goal. Okay. And it should be. If Andrew Friedman and the Dodgers front office was operating in any other way than that, it would be malpractice. Mm-hmm. And that is how every single group, leadership group, ownership group, that should be the lens through which they view roster construction every offseason, every trade deadline, whatever. And too many teams don't. However, so first, Andy, does that quote tell you anything?
Well, yeah, I mean, it also stuck out to me. I mean, when they won the World Series, that was kind of what I built the running story around with that idea, because it's something, you know, as being there at the beginning of that era, like it's very much something that they have been dedicated to. And I think they've become more vocal about it as they've gotten, you know, they've really built it into the juggernaut. But yeah, like, of course, that's what you should be doing. Like, that's what the Yankees should be trying to do. That's what Steve Cohen is openly trying to do. It's just different when it's like Steve Cohen and you're like, I'm trying to change the way the Mets are perceived versus Hal Steinbrenner, who's like, we're trying to make good decisions and, you know, keep the Yankee brand strong. But Hal never comes out and says, like, we want this to be the golden era of Yankee baseball. Frankly, that would be quite challenging to do. You know, it's really challenging for the Dodgers to do it, partially because they were losing to the Yankees in the World Series every year. Like, yeah, and they have structural advantages that some other teams have as well. And they are just pushing them, you know, to the hilt. And so, like, yeah, it's exactly what you want your owner to be doing.
I think
it is both fair and unfair to say other teams should be acting more like the Dodgers, because look, the Cubs, Red Sox, Yankees, those types of teams, the Giants, the Astros, the Braves should be spending more than they are probably, right? I think it is, there is no world in which the Pittsburgh Pirates are running a $370 million payroll. That does not exist, right? There are substantive differences between these markets. And I think to just crumple up a ball of spend more money and throw it at every small market team, I think simplifies things a little bit too much. The gap, they all should be doing that, but there is a ceiling to their spending and it is not $370 million. I now want to read an email that I got to the podcast. Hi, Jake and Jordan. I think it is time for all of us who love baseball to acknowledge that what the Dodgers have done these past two offseasons hurts the game. When they signed so many of the top 20 free agents, it really depresses fans, especially casual fans. We can all say other owners should spend more, but none of them have $330 million TV deals. So unless they're Steve Cohen, it's unrealistic. Baseball is going to have to do something, I think. I had a long back and forth email with a different listener about the Dodgers when they signed Blake Snell. And something that that listener said to me that really has stuck with me is, it's not that it's unfair, it's that it's unfun.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
Super teams are good. Like, villains are good. Like, it's good to have a team that the rest of the sport can root against. Like, the New England Patriots were good for business. The Kansas City Chiefs are good for business. The New York Yankees are good for business. Like, it is a net benefit for the sport to have a team that everyone can sort of look at as like they're competing against. And I also think too, like, we are so close. Like, we are so not far removed from the Dodgers in their bumbling Colossus era. I am stealing that phrase from a tweet that I do not remember who said it, but someone described them as a bumbling Colossus, and it was just so perfectly encapsulated this 110 win machine that collapses in the first round every year. Like, that is like 15, I don't know how to do the math, but like, that's last year. That's
was October. They were a game away.
They were so like, and so again, the margins of this, like, they went from being the laughing stock of the sport, this team that buys all these players and cannot, you know, get over the hump, to a team that's breaking the game basically on the strength of like a bullpen game against the Padres and Yoshinobu Yamamoto pitching really well 2 days later. Like, I get the sentiment from fans. I get all of that. But like, man, they're going to play a season this year. The Dodgers probably won't win the World Series. And like, it'll be like, people will enjoy that. And that's good for the sport.
Every time the Patriots lost in the Super Bowl was the best.
Yeah. It's the best. People like that.
It was amazing. Like, I don't care about the Eagles. I know you do. But like, I happened to be in Philadelphia when the Eagles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and it was amazing, right? Having a team to hate that we all agree that we hate, like, there is a unifying energy about that. And we had that with the Yankees in the 90s, and to act as if the Dodgers right now are the first team to flex a competitive advantage, either financially or, you know, institutionally, I think that kind of misses the point. Like, this is not new. Maybe the numbers are bigger than they've ever been before because inflation and money, but this is not necessarily a development that's the first of its kind.
Yeah, no, it's not, certainly not the last of its kind, though. That is available. It sucks. I will say this, nice, too. When you think about how the Dodgers build their rosters, what is the most valuable thing on a baseball team? What's the most valuable type of player? It is a 0-6.
A guy who can lay one down in a big spot to move a runner over.
Right. It is Mark Lemke. It's either Mark Lemke or a guy who can pitch and hit. So it's either Lemke or Otani. No, it's a 0-6 superstar, right? It's Bobby Witt Jr. It's, you know, whatever. Where do you get those players? You get them through the draft mostly. And in which portion of the draft do you get them? In the top few picks. And where do the Dodgers never end up?
in the top few picks. They do not have access to the most valuable type of player. They don't. They are too good. They have played themselves out of ever being able to draft Adley Rutschman, to draft Bobby Witt Jr. I don't really pay attention to the draft. I'm sure there's some other guys recently have come up. But they don't have access to those type of players, right? So what they are doing, rather than like, trying to, tear down and get back into that pool, is they're just like, all right, let's just max out our advantages. Because they are structurally unable to get into the most valuable talent pool. Now, like, do I feel pity for them? No. But that's how the system works. The system funnels Paul Skeens to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Okay? The Pittsburgh Pirates got Paul Skeens by being bad. The Dodgers do not get anything for being good. They have to spend money to continue to be good.
That's not true. They get money by being good. Well, right?
Okay, but like they aren't given good players because of that. They aren't given it's not to say, oh, the poor Dodgers, they don't get to draft Paul Skeens, but it's like they understand, right, that they don't have access to the thing that would make them, the thing they want the most. So they're going to just spend all their money on the stuff they can actually buy.
As they should.
Yeah.
As they should.
Like, it is what it is.
They're playing within the rules of the game.
Yeah.
I think it is totally fine and fair and understandable for fans of other teams to, when they get the notification on their phone that the Dodgers signed Tanner Scott, to go to roll their eyes and go, ugh, God, right? Like, that should frustrate you. That's how fandom works. But that's fine. Like, to me, there's two. You and I are looking at the game from a very different way than like 99% of people, where most people are looking at baseball through the lens of how they care about their team. And every single transaction that happens, or trend or development, is what does this mean for the Cincinnati Reds, right? And for 29 fan bases, the Dodgers kicking everyone's ass in free agency is bad for them. And that's how you end up with this overwhelming sentiment that the Dodgers are bad for baseball. Now, I get why people think that. I also think that any conversation that's like, is this bad for baseball, is kind of inherently stupid.
Yeah. I think it gets into the NBA ran into this problem, and they're reckoning with it now, where the offseason became more interesting than the actual season. And it's happened at a time when like their product on the court has gotten worse with the proliferation of threes and analytics, dude. Analytics ruining basketball. Very funny to me.
Is there anyone in the NBA who can get one? Lay one down, get a guy over.
Right. Whatever happened to a 20-foot jump shot, huh?
Yeah, man.
But the whole thing is like the NBA became a league that was less about the product on the court and more about like, is this star going to go to this team, and, off-court sort of intrigue. And eventually it's just sort of like run out of gas, right? And I think that like the best marketing tool for baseball is the sport baseball. It's like watching baseball is fun to do, and the best players are fun to watch. And so like the thing is, every off season, and it's going to get worse, as we get closer to a likely work stoppage after the CBA goes out after 2026, is like, there's going to be discourse of like, is this bad for the game? Is this good for the game? Bad for the game? Good for the game? And then the season will start and everyone will be like, hey, it's baseball. I like watching that. That's good. Like, all right. Like, well, this is fun. It's just, that's kind of what the offseason is now. Like, it's a time for discourse because there's no games on TV.
Right. And we don't have the same level of drama as we do in the NBA, which, is maybe less compelling in the offseason, but I do like that it puts the focus back on the diamond in a way, right? Like, I think that that's kind of the point.
Season's long and, it's fun to watch. I mean, I don't know. We're like 2 years ago, the Mets spent all that money and it was like, oh my God, are the Mets breaking? Is Steve Cohen breaking the system? And then just like, oh wait, that team stunk and they traded all the players. Like, the Dodgers are different. I get that they're different.
Because they're good at it.
Sure. But
again, like, dude, the way to describe this conversation, and I don't want to be too dismissive, is just like, is this a freaking skill issue? You know what I mean? Like, the Dodgers are good at what they do. That's the point, right? They've created this juggernaut and that's their job. And like, if they win four of the next five, then let's talk about that, right?
But if they win four of the next five, what a great story that is. That hasn't happened in so long. Yeah. Like,
I am sure if you go back to, you know, newspaper coverage in the 1990s, out-of-town writers would be writing how the Yankees are bad for baseball. For sure. You'll be able to find, you know, columns and papers that aren't from New York. If you turn on, you know, like if there was TV broadcasts, there'd be, you know, sportscasters saying, you know, the Yankees are ruining baseball, blah, blah, blah. And like we look back, it's like, wow, that you look back on it fondly. It's like a time you got to watch a dynasty, right? Like a time that you got to see a team like really be memorable.
I think you do. But I think, like I said, what is the lens for 20 for most people? Right.
That's a good point.
I could tell you as a kid who grew up in the DC area caring about the Baltimore Orioles, like I was a little too young for that. But like people who are 10 years older than me don't look upon that fondly if you've
that's
rooted
a,
for, you
know. That's what I mean? A good point. I do have, I will say, one of my problems is I have sports writer brain. I really do.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's and fair.
I think I get your point. Like, okay, the Bulls were good for basketball in the 90s, right? I think that the Patriots were both infuriating for people and entertaining. I think the same is true about the Chiefs right now.
I mean, right? Yeah, the Chiefs are like, yeah, yes. And so it would be one thing if the Dodgers were like winning the World Series by purposely getting hit by pitches or something. Like, but that's kind of what the Chiefs have become right now. So I don't know if you watched the game the other day, but Patrick Mahomes is blatantly trying to draw roughing the quarterback penalties.
That's
anyway,
great.
Neither
great
here
strategy.
Nor there.
I got to tip my cap to that.
They never lose.
It's working. Let's take a break. And when we get back, I'm going to ask one dumb question about how the Dodgers' behavior may impact the next collective bargaining. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. Jacob Mintz is my name. Robert Andrew McCullough is his name. Jordan Schusterman is sitting on a beach drinking a ginger ale, probably. Let's ask one dumb question. Now, this was brought to my attention by the Internet Machine, which I do use often. This is a poll on a website called MLBTradeRumors.com. In my opinion, a good website. A valuable resource for people who care too much about this institution. The name of this post on MLB Trade Rumors is Poll. Would you trade the 2027 MLB season for a salary cap? This is a dumb question. Okay. This is a dumb question. And when I saw this question, I thought that's a dumb question. And then I scrolled to the results of this, in my opinion, dumb question, and I was floored by them. There are 26,538 responses on this poll. Again, are you willing to lose the entire 2027 season? Not a month, not a week, the whole thing. No baseball, not at all. In exchange for a salary cap after that, 50.01%. of the voters said yes, yes, the very small majority of people would be willing to forego the entirety of a baseball season to institute a salary cap. That's, I guess, both a dumb question and 13,272 dumb answers.
Yeah, I do wonder, like, how different would this poll look if the Guardians had beaten the Padres in the World Series.
Or you ask this in May.
Yeah, like timing is also true. Like the sort of person who is thinking about implementing a salary cap at this juncture wants a salary cap. I cover baseball for a living and I have not thought, man, I could really go for a salary cap in quite some time. By the way, the CBT, it functions as a cap. And if you don't believe me, you should look at the spending of all the teams that could go above it, basically, besides like the handful that do. And now, whatever. So, yeah, man, I do think that there's going to be
you know, there's going to be a labor stoppage almost certainly. That's the sort of belief talking to people on both sides, is that, you know, there's going to be some sort of stoppage or, you know, lockout will be the most likely sort of mechanism. It'll be similar to how it was a few years ago. Whether or not they'll miss games, you know, we'll see. That's a tough one. But obviously, yeah, there's a lot of owners who want a salary cap. It's better for their bottom line.
In the last negotiations, something that I found compelling was how the public sentiment around the relationship between the league and the union had kind of shifted over the previous 5 years. It felt like the public sentiment was pretty vehemently anti-league, anti-owner, and much more kind of pro-player, pro-union. Do you think that the way that the Dodgers have operated could meaningfully shift the public opinion back the other way in a meaningful manner?
I don't know. I wouldn't tie it directly to the Dodgers. I think it's more, I think some of that anti-league, anti-team, anti-league sentiment is tied a lot closer to the pandemic and how people felt coming out of 2020 and 2021. I think it's really hard to separate, that sort of, mindset that was more prevalent around then as compared to in 2025. I don't know if you've noticed, but some things have changed in America since then, and the vibes have in some ways shifted. So I don't know if there is as stridently a, you know, pro-labor public stance as there is. I mean, you know, but yeah, like that was one thing that has very much changed. And I think Ben Strauss wrote a good story about this in the Washington Post. It's like the coverage has gone from, you know, in like the 90s, it was more pro-team to now it is more pro-labor in sort of a, you know, columnistic bent. And that probably will change. But I do think, yeah, there's going to be more public sentiment for, you know, leveling the playing field, making it so that there can't be these big spend. Sorry, not to go long, but like the union is so vehemently no salary cap, never salary cap. We cannot do a salary cap. It's like the legacy of Marvin Miller that there is no salary cap. I don't know if the public cares about that as much as they did 4 or 5 years ago.
Right. And I think that is important to understand here. I think you get why a large portion of fans sees what the Dodgers are doing and says, we need a salary cap, right? Now, I think that idea will influence the league and the owners to come to the bargaining table in 2 years and say, we would like a salary cap, right? That will never happen. Let's just be I want to be pretty clear about that, at least in the CBA. In order for there to be a salary cap, like, it is the biggest point of pride for the MLB Players Association that they are the league without a cap, that they are the most powerful union in professional sports. It is a non-starter for them, right? Whether or not it should be, like, I don't want to have that conversation right now, but like, it's a non-starter, okay? And I think that if the league shows up at the table and thinks that it is a realistic thing to ask for based upon a shifted public sentiment, that has the potential to complicate the negotiations in a bad way, right?
Yeah, I guess it's going to come down to, you know, just how strident certain pockets of owners are going to be towards pushing for that. Because yeah, it's obviously that's their number one ask, you know, but in the same way that like a player's number one ask is like, we like free agency after 3 years, you know,
congrats, dude.
Yeah. Like, okay. We'd like the arbitration system, you know, to start after year one and free agency after year, you know, whatever. Like there's compromises that could be made, but yeah, like, as you said, the union is very, very prideful of that fact. And also the owners, if you talk to people who like deal in ownership circles, like they get mocked by owners from other leagues about not having a salary cap. It's something that like rich guys make fun of other rich guys for, right?
It's just Jerry Reinsdorf talking to himself too.
Like, did you ever see that movie Heavyweights?
No. Oh, yes.
Ben Stiller was like, how you doing, little Tony? Not good, you know? I don't foresee that. I think it'll come up and there's going to be a lot of discourse about it. It's that's a real red line for the union. I think more likely, you know, you might see compromises on international draft, on, you know, maybe changes to the ARB system. There's probably going to be more, you know, taxes put in and things like that. But, you know, a cap is, that's a bridge so far for, you know, the union rank and file that I just don't foresee them bending on it. And I don't know if baseball's a good business, you know, like, so I don't know if the owners want to miss a year of games. Like, I don't know if it would be worth it to them to get the cap in exchange for that. I think that's the choke point as well.
From one dominating team to another, let's go around the league. The Toronto Blue Jays have signed.
What a transition.
Thank you so much. Have signed Anthony Santander, the slugging corner outfielder, to a 5-year contract, $92.5 million, heavily deferred, first reported by John Morosi. The present value with all those deferrals is around $70 million. He can opt out after the third year. Toronto can then say, no, you're not opting out, and add another year onto the deal. Remember the last time there was a presidential inauguration and there was a report that the Blue Jays had signed Michael Brantley?
I had no recollection inauguration of this.
You don't remember this? Oh, this no, was like during the Biden inauguration, and
oh man,
there was like a report. I can't remember who it was, but it was just like one of the Brantley people that the we Blue trust.
Jays. Yeah,
it was like Brantley the Blue Jays. And then by the time the inauguration was over, it was like he's going back to the Astros.
That is weird. Yeah, I have no recollection of that at all. But I'm looking at it, and that apparently did happen.
Yeah, Santander to the Jays makes sense. It is a lot of years for a player who I think is pretty flawed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Blue Jays were 26th in home runs in baseball last year. Their lowest home run total as a franchise since 2004, which is pretty embarrassing considering the era that we're in. Santander was third in the league in home runs behind Judge and Otani. Like, it's pretty straightforward. I don't think he's good at defense, and I think that so much of his profile is wrapped up in his ability to hit home runs. He doesn't really look. Batting average in 2025, what is it? It's still relevant, right? It's still important to get hits. Santander doesn't do that a whole lot. That being said, this was a move the Jays had to make, and it gives them a path towards making the playoffs.
A path towards third place in the East.
Yeah, which might be enough.
I mean, it's tough. They obviously still have some money to spend, and I wouldn't rule them out on Pete Alonso, who, you know, would make sense now that, you know, the Mets appear to have, you know, at least, you know, seem to have moved on. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, they're acting as if, and we'll see if Alonso, you know, takes the bait and goes elsewhere. If you're Toronto, it's good to do something. Santander has been a good player. However, you look at the profile and you're like, I can see how this could go sideways. But at the same time, you know, if he's the player he was last year, they're better. You know, it allows them to, you know, score more points. You're banking on Bo Bichette bouncing back. You know, you're banking on having some sort of extension with Vlad Guerrero. They still have, you know, a good starting rotation, still have some good relievers. There's some stuff to like there, but that seemed to me for a little while for a team that could use something of a shakeup, and they kind of haven't done that. They kind of just keep running it back in like less impressive ways. So we'll see.
Their offseason as a whole, though, I think is better than they have gotten credit for. It's super easy to be like, look at these idiots finishing in third place for every major free agent. But when you look at what they've done, which is trade for Andrés Giménez, who is really a special defender and a decent down order bat that they needed, Santander and Jeff Hoffman, like, that's a better offseason than the Orioles or the Rays.
Well, the Orioles are a whole different category of, like, you know, what are we? That's a team who has access to that 0-6 star and is like, we don't want anything to do with guys on the other side. We do not want that. That other thing over there, the Dodgers can have them.
When I was in Japan, one of my tour guides, upon finding out I was a baseball person, asked, like, what do you think about Sagano signing with the Orioles? And I was like, yeah, it's an interesting ad. And this guy goes, he's kind of washed. Like, he doesn't throw that hard. And I was like, oh no. God damn it.
Dude, man. Getting cooked in Japan is brutal.
Yeah, it was tough. It was pretty tough. That's it. there's really like we had no other news really bubbling up over the weekend. I guess the A's signed Jose Leclerc as they try to get other people to take their money.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get the Hall of Fame results tonight, which will be exciting. Andy, as someone who does not vote for the Hall of Fame, though could, what is exciting to you about Hall of Fame season? Like, is there anything about it that you like?
Watching people get yelled at online, you know, and then try and defend their opinions. That's always fun. That's what the Hall of Fame is all about, you know, is just, you know, checking a box and then having a random guy in Toledo tell you you should be fired.
That is my least favorite part about the Hall of Fame discourse, because we end up doing this thing where we just try and pick really good players apart in public instead of celebrating the good ones. And like, I just feel like Hall of Fame season turns into here's 10 reasons why Scott Rolen wasn't actually that good. And it's sure. Like, well, like actually he was pretty good, but you know, he was better than a lot of the guys who didn't even make the ballot. So I don't know. I think tonight will be cool especially if Ichiro gets in unanimous. Like that is special. That will be a phenomenal moment. I am a Billy Wagner apologist stan fanboy. Because Andy, as I'm sure you know, he is the greatest Division III player of all time.
Who? And then, so good. Ichiro's going to get in.
Yeah.
Right. And then Sabathia's got a chance, maybe. I haven't looked at Ryan Thibodeau's thing in a little while.
This is great. I'll tell Andy who gets in the Hall of Fame. Ichiro's going to get in. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
CeCe will almost certainly get in.
That's nice.
Wagner will get in. And then, like, Beltran's right on the edge.
Interesting. Okay. So yeah. Sabathia is interesting for me because he is someone who I think from a straight up numbers perspective, like if you're looking at just the raw war data, is less of a candidate. My cat Harry has decided to stop by. He's like less of a candidate than say like Kevin Brown or like Curt Schilling, certainly. You know, there's other stuff obviously going on with Schilling, but just from a pure, like Schilling should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Like what?
Even before Schilling went the way he went, he first ballot should have gotten in, like, you know, for just what he did on the field, right? But that's neither here nor there. I think that it is going to be interesting to see as pitchers get judged by a more modern standard. And I think based on like what that standard is, like Sabathia, should be in. He was awesome. I think he was more valuable than some of that, you know, the raw data suggests in the way he like took the baseball and the way he pitched deeper into games and protected his staff for a lot of years with the Yankees. And so, so there's going to be other guys who come up in the future who are judged by, you know, less of the like, you know, if you're under 70 wins or something like 70, you know, Baseball Reference wins above a replacement, you know, you have a better chance just because the era has asked for less of you.
Andy, thank you for joining this episode of this podcast. Is there anything else in your brain that's tickling your fancy that you'd like to share with the world?
Go Birds.
Oh, here's a question. Explain Saquon Barkley's 2024 to me in baseball terms.
I don't know. I just immediately comes to mind like BC Sabathia in 2009 with the Yankees, where it's like they went and got this incredible player and he just did exactly what he was brought there to do right away. He's awesome. He's like, I played football for 10 years growing up and like played in Pop Warner and I played on a very good Pop Warner team and a very bad high school team. And it's not uncommon in Pop Warner to have like a really good running back who can just like, if a kid's like fast and like can move a little bit, he can just like break an 80-yard run at any moment. We had a guy on our team named Kevin Garland who was like incredible. You know, he played in college. He ended up having, you know, he was a good player. And Barkley is like watching that in the NFL where he will just like get a little bit of space and just be gone for like 80 yards. And there's just not other players in the NFL who do that. It's really awesome to watch. I'm glad he's a Philadelphia Eagle.
Well, go Birds. Thank you, Andy, for filling in. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, for producing this podcast. You can reach us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Jordan Schusterman will be back on Thursday. He is not traveling for 5 weeks like my sorry ass. But until then, we bid you a farewell. We will talk to you soon. Goodbye. Oh, buy Andy's book. All right, goodbye.